stay the course. We are dead. We are all dead.
We're supposed to make the world a better place. What happened?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I know Kung Fu.
You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
This whole thing is insane. This whole thing is insane.
300 years ago, you'd have been burned at the stake.
What do all men of power want? More power.
This is now the United States of Zombieland.
This whole thing is insane.
Man is even capable of nothing but destruction.
Everybody is stuck with the things that they're not proud of.
More power.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
More power.
There can be only one.
Are you a God-fearing man, Senator? That's such a strange phrase. I've always thought of God as a teacher, as a bringer of light, wisdom, and understanding. You see, I think what you really are afraid of is me.
Happy heresies and welcome to the desert of the real. Heresy shouldn't be this much fun, but it is. It just is. Especially with the latest AB Live, audio version for thee in this eternal now. An Ask Me Anything was the perfect topic as I hit 100 AB Live shows. I was joined by Dr. Joanna Guyawa, author of The Other Goddess, and Dan Morse, author of The Divine Spark Within. We exchanged Gnostic ideas while answering some thought-provoking questions. Topics included the origins of Gnosticism, the Cathars, sex magic, Egyptian mysticism, Mary Magdalene, and how to gain that self-knowledge, that gnosis, to break out of the simulation and into your authentic self. Entire audio is available to everyone, as this is a celebration and milestone. As I mentioned at the start of the interview, and after a promo video, the virtual Alexandria Academy is now open. Link on the show notes and on my homepage. But here is a brief summary of online education you won't find anywhere else on the internet. You get 4 modules, more than 25 hours, and 15 plus classes of visually stunning videos, slides, and commentaries from me, and even some experts, academics, and theologians in the Gnostic field. There are detailed instructions, audio video recreations, and materials you can use for research or incorporation into your spiritual praxis. There are downloadable assets like prayers to the Gnostic goddess, vowel magic and chanting science, astral flight rituals, and more. The virtual Alexandria Academy also includes Gnostic astral journey diagrams, magical seal graphics, and detailed reconstructions of Gnostic rituals, and bonus videos to better understand the module themes, and much more. As a holiday rollout promo, get 20% off with the code AEONBITE, one word. And check out Joanna's course too, and certainly Dan's great book. We need Gnosis more than ever in this Age of Hermes, Philip K. Dick world, and Gnostic times. Expect more violence, wars, rising addiction and suicide rates, mass depression, and societal collapse until more look inward while breaking the outward spell of Yaldibaldi and his Epstein angels. You won't find this high-quality Gnostic and Hermetic wisdom, or many of my guests and their unique insights, anywhere else in cyberspace or even meat space. Other than that, let us to our 100th AB Live celebration. Let's party like it's 1899. And here is a clip from that very show we discussed too in the interview.
Mm-hmm. We're born into this world either a seeker or an avoider. To be an avoider is pure bliss. To be a seeker, on the other hand, brings nothing but pain. You will open every door, step into the darkest voids, driven by the urge to gain more knowledge. Contrary to your brother, you were born a seeker. And I wish now that you weren't. You tried to get rid of your pain, but all you did was create more pain.
Stop! This is just one of your sick mind games.
You give me more credit than I deserve. This is not my sick mind game. It's yours. You are the creator.
You're lying. That's not true.
You created this. You and your husband. This is your design. You forced this path onto everyone. They're all trapped in this loop because of you. I will leave this godforsaken place now. And for you, it's time to forget again.
Welcome, everybody. We are officially live. Some of you might be saying, what was that? Yes, a new intro video. Actually, a promo video for the new course I just released, soft release today, the Virtual Alexandria Academy, and it is live to the world like we are live now. More than 20 videos, more than 15 videos, more than 20, 25 hours of education. It is me creating a thorough, exciting, compassing, approachable Gnostic course that covers everything from the origins of Gnosticism, several texts, including Thunder Perfect Mind, Gospel of Thomas, many of the Gnostic sects, their rituals, whether you are interested in history, you are a practitioner, or just want to expand your mind, this is the course for you. I will have information on the show notes that you can check out. There is a promo discount. There is so much. There are download, for those of you who take the course, downloadable materials, bonuses, quizzes, the whole shebang. So check it out, and I will have more. I don't want to spend too much time because this podcast is also the Gnostic course. And tonight, I'm very excited. We are celebrating 100 shows, and it seemed like a good time to simply have our first Ask Me Anything and to expand, to answer your questions, because there's always so much to learn when it comes to the Gnostics, the Hermeticists, and all their satellites. So welcome, everybody, and I see you already in the chat room. Good to see you. Appreciate your company. And our guests tonight are excellent. They certainly have a lot of gnosis. And first of all, I'd like to welcome Dr. Joanna Cuyava, my friend and a great scholar. How are you, Joanna?
I'm good. Thank you, Miguel, for inviting me here. What an honor and pleasure.
Pleasure is all ours, of course, but always fun to talk to you, of course. And with us, too, we've got Dan Morse, who was on recently and whose book, The Divine Spark Within, I am read it like twice. I'm using so much of the scholarship. It's one of the best books, along with Joanna's book, The Other Goddess on Gnosticism, Modern, Historical, Updated, Spiritual. Dan, thank you very much for coming back.
It's great to be here. Once again, Miguel.
Certainly. And last but never least, as I said the other day, my favorite American since Jesus Christ, and that is the dog moon, the moon dog Vance. Vance, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine tonight. I'm really happy that I managed to spot Ron Perlman's wife in the course promo video. Yeah, you know that huge goddess that she goes in the room there? That's Ron Perlman's wife. You see the big jaw there.
Yeah, that is true. Good old Ron Perlman, huh? Yeah, he's a quite a character, and I used to reference him much. And so, great to see you, Vance. And for those of you who might want to know, AB Live just kind of started as a lark. I mean, it was, I think, end of 2019, and it was kind of like, hey, let's get together, Vance, with some other people, and let's just talk current events, social, political things. It was called Heretics Anonymous. Yeah. And it just got rebranded because it was so spread out with Abraxas Brief and this is like, and so forth. And we were just shooting the shit, and guests would come in and out, like Tracy Twyman would join us 1 week and so forth. And eventually it just kind of evolved into part of AM Byte, except it's the live part where the audience can ask questions, where we can show some visuals and so forth. And it always comes out in some audio version. Also, too, the whole political thing and social political was really wasn't working, because it's like you have to have a stance every week on the current thing. And then I was feeling we're part of the whole divide and conquer. You know, these political comment, even philosophical commentators, they got to take a stance. And we were losing sight of what matter, what is timeless, what is eternal, all that good stuff. And so it just sort of evolved into AB Live, and have a lot of fun with it, and we shall continue. But we've never done an Ask Me Anything, although people can ask questions in the Facebook group, they can ask questions in the Discord channel, and I get plenty of emails and so forth on it. And I already have some questions for some of you. As always, please write your questions in all caps. For Vance, question marks. If you have a super chat, of course, you will get thrown up to the front of the line. Can be a dollar, 50 cents, whatever. It's no, whatever you can contribute. I don't think I have, do I have any house cleaning? No, the course, Virtual Alexandria Academy. We'll have some news with Joanna in a little bit. For the next show, very excited. After this, we will have Howard Marzinski, Makowski, sorry. He just came out with a book called Exit Plato's Cave, and it's very good. Straight up, the ethos of Aeon Bai touches upon all the things we talk about on the show, but he has some great insights on things that people have missed on Plato's Cave, on the Cathars, near-death experiences. But he talks about the simulation, and it's very edgy. So many of you like Ola Wolny's interview because she brought so much edge and new ideas. Howard does the same thing in his interview, so I think you'll enjoy it. So that will be out in a couple of days. So we continue our war against the Archons, and other good shows coming in December to end 2022. So other than that, I guess first, as I mentioned before the interview, there is always a lot of misconceptions about Gnosticism. So I thought we could talk about our pet peeves and then go on to audience questions. But Joanna, what are some of the myths? By myths, I mean wrong things, fictions, not like, you know, Joseph Campbell myths. What are some of the myths about Gnosticism that irk you, or that you would like to correct in your, from your stance?
Oh, I don't know if I want to correct them. I just kind of reflected upon them. You know, for example, in my book, I was trying to do this, and in my blogging, when I was talking about Gnostics and sexuality, because my general assumption is that celibacy is a little bit of a myth. We all are celibate occasionally, but in spiritual terms, most of us groups were actually not ascetic necessarily, and they were not avoiding sexuality. In fact, they had often a very radical approach towards sexuality, which I came across simply because I was looking for something similar when I was a student of Kashmir Shaivism, which is a tantric, esoteric tantra and esoteric school of tantra and Hinduism. So I thought that the Gnostics were unnecessarily presented as a body-hating, you know, people, when in fact they just had a completely different approach towards body and towards you know, and towards sexuality. So I think that perhaps it would be the most radical thing that I want to say. And of course, you know, because I had a sneak preview for everybody of Miguel's course, and he also covers this in one of his modules. It's a fantastic course. So, and I don't know how long you want me to talk about, but you also had a Tobias Chertan on the show who wrote a wonderful book on Gnostic mysteries of sex. And I just kind of adjusted it in my book, you know, simplify it a little bit. But whether it is Venaseni or Periatics, I focus on these two groups because they really basically follow all kinds of radical teachings of radical tantra. And the same, so they basically talk about serpent, which is Kundalini energy. They talk about, you know, drinking sexual fluids to achieve the kingdom of God, you know, wild stuff, right? So not exactly ascetic and not exactly body hating. But what Gnostic, which obviously it is a kind of very general description, as we know, right? What the Gnostic are often believed, it is that they didn't want to procreate, right? Which is very different than avoiding eros or avoiding sexuality. So so this is, I think, one of major misconceptions about Gnostics. And then it basically goes to the Cathars as well, because Cathars were often portrayed in southern France as, you know, very aesthetic and body hating, when in fact, again, they were Ranciman, Stephen Ranciman, who wrote the Medieval Manicure, which was like a standard book on the Cathars for, and still consider, you know, is the main book on the Cathars really in modern scholarship. You know, he was a little bit of a materialist, so he didn't really go into spirituality, but he said that was a misconception. Cathars also believed that, you know, they didn't want to procreate, but they didn't avoid sexuality, right? So in fact, I just sometimes wonder, and we're starting kind of on a kinky side here, but I just sometimes wonder when, for example, the French love, you know, or oral sex actually had to do with the Cathars, because they were accused of looking for inventive ways to avoid pregnancy, why they engage in sexuality sometimes in a very flamboyant way. And in fact, I don't remember, because it was still when I was at the University of Toronto, I remember there was this Cathar teacher that somehow is not known in English literature. It was a French professor told me, who was like a rock star, you know. He was like Dionysus or Bacchus, you know. He had a following of groupies, and, you know, there was a scandal because he was sleeping with all of these women, and he was a Cathar. Mm. Okay, so this is what I'm saying. There are all of these misconceptions, because, and if I'm just not on the roll, so let me finish, because when I was actually studying at the Pontifical Institute, and I was talking to a nun, and I said, oh, how do you deal with, you know, no sex? And she says, who told you that we don't have sex? She says, celibacy doesn't mean not having sex. Celibacy means not producing children. So I realized that even in the Catholic Church, there is this fine distinction. You know, and it blew my mind. I kind of stood there in her office.
A loophole.
And I thought, I was in a loophole, and this is like not what I thought. So I think that this, I try to touch upon it in my book, but I think some serious academic who just wants to do academic stuff, I consider myself more as a bridge between academia and, you know, and myself, really, you know, then I think reconsider what sexuality actually meant for the Gnostics, because there is a plenty evidence of, you know, that it wasn't this way. And in fact, there were all kinds of accusations about, you know, promiscuity and just different approach towards sexuality. So
that's, yeah, really well said, Joanna. And yes, peerless loser. Yes, there is somebody call that in the chat. I'm not insulting one of the people in the league, but yes, I have seen 1899, and it is some of the best Gnostic content this year, along with the show Severance. So definitely check out both. They're very, very good, and I am already stealing clips. But yeah, Joanna, you're right. The Gnostics were, in my presentation, it's 2 hours, and it goes in how the Gnostics were pretty wild about this, or pretty moderate. It was very important. Eros was very important to the Gnostics, except perhaps for anything in the Thomasine community, Acts of Thomas, Gospel of... There was, and I probably a Syrian contingent that just decided we're going to take another path, which is fine. So, you know, and then, of course, Ancretism became very popular in the 4th and 5th century in the Roman Empire. So those behind the Book of You, even other texts, decided we're going to try this. But yeah, sexuality was not an issue with the Gnostics, unlike the Roman Catholic counterparts, if you would. In fact, Valentinus might have saved the entire church from being completely celibate and having no marriage and all that. And you've written about it. April De Koninck has written about it. Valentinus. He was Rudolf Valentino of his time.
I love it. Rudolf Valentino.
He's a great actor I loved.
So, if he failed, there wouldn't be a Catholic church, right? One generation, they'd all be gone. No procreation.
Exactly. But
I just want to add, 1899, I just stopped watching it. I was watching it with my husband, and it is amazing. Like, if you're in a simulation, it's just completely simulation thing, you know? So for most of the time, I didn't know what it was about, except that it was about simulation, the world being a complete simulation. So very, very good show. I agree.
Agreed. It's fun. Well, Dan, what do you think? Do you have anything to say about what we're saying, or any misconceptions in the simulation on Gnosticism, or from what people have reacted to your book, or anything like that?
Yes. Well, myths or misconceptions of Gnosticism. It's been 1700 years of misconceptions that have
at least
plagued this tradition. It's so funny. It's the old adage, you know, history is written by the victors. I mean, this is maybe the most shining example of this. Catholicism, the Roman Orthodox tradition, essentially wrote out and changed the story in order to highlight an Orthodox system that was essentially contrary to Gnosticism. And so if we were to sort of backtrack or reverse engineer, look back through the texts and the traditions, it's pretty clear that Gnosticism it emerged at least alongside Christianity, if not a little before. And the mystical tradition of Gnosticism was really independent of Christianity and particularly Orthodox Christianity. And so how do we account for this? This is very strange. And of course, the New Testament and the heresiologists would, say, especially the heresiologists and the early architects of Christianity would say that it's a heresy. Gnosticism is a heresy. Gnosticism is a bastardization of Christianity. And so if we're to play the heresy game, I think that Gnosticism is more a heresy. It's a Jewish heresy. Gnosticism Judaism was so offended by Gnosticism, especially the idea of Yahweh being the demiurge. What an outrageous idea. But if we're to take heresy even further, we might say that Christianity is a Gnostic heresy. Christianity has taken a more comprehensive, broad-based system and kind of chiseled it down and packaged it in a way that could be, more assimilable to more people, and a church could be founded around it, and it could be replicated, and there could be, a hierarchy that could support that particular tradition. So, yes, Gnosticism has had a tough road in the last 1700 years.
Yeah.
Can I just intercept here? Because this is very interesting point of view, and I really like what you're saying. But I also think, about this French scholar, Jean-Yves Leloup, who I'm completely admiring. I'm sure that you know him. He's just has for me the most subtle explanations of Gnostic documents from my point of view. So I'm a big fan of him. He says that, why do we have to actually make this kind of division between like Christianity and Gnostics or Gnostico? He says they're just different religious movements. It was a very kind of interesting time, first century BC and AD, right? Spiritually right? There were different movements arising from the Holy Land or Palestine or, you know, and Egypt, and they're mixing together. And just some of them were more, you know, easy to organize, so to speak, right? When others were more kind of difficult to organize and resistant to institutionalization. And that's actually the only difference, rather than who held the more truth, basically. So it's not like the Gnosticoi had completely different, they did have a completely different view, I agree, but that they were on a side and there was this Christian movement, when in fact it was just all kind of weaving together. And then some of them were just basically picked up as easier to control or organize. What do you think about that?
Curious. Yes, I think that it's almost it's similar to the relationship between the exoteric and the esoteric, and the relationship between heterodoxy and orthodoxy. That yes, heterodoxy was really what was happening back in that day. You know, back in the late first century BC, early first century AD, that you know, so many traditions, Egyptian, you know, Greek, Persian, just all intermingling and very exciting, and yet it really was the political arm, I think, of the Roman Orthodox system that attempted to really define a more singularity, you know, a more singular system, and cutting out the diversity, and literally calling it, you know, calling heterodoxy heresy, you know, heresy, of course, meaning more, you know, that it's really open-ended concepts and diversity of thought, you know. So, but it's hard to say, you know, what really was going on back in that day.
Well, look at things the way things are today. You know, the leaders of these movements, you know, accuse each other of being heretics, but the general population that vaguely follows Catholicism or, you know, Protestantism or whatever they're following, they're all heretics, because none of them really follow the movements 100%. Especially look at the Catholics, right? How many people, you know, believe in birth control, which, you know, for the Catholics, which is taboo, and a lot of people don't even know what the movement is. So I bet you way back when, you know, wasn't that all the Gnostics were like really dyed-in-the-wool Gnostics? They're probably people that gravitated over there and believed in a lot of things. And I bet you the reality was kind of just as mushed up as we have today.
Indeed, I would say, and I do have actually, as a surprise, a small presentation which actually deals with the origins of Gnosticism, or very distinct. But yeah, I would say the key to the Gnostics is this tapping directly, or grabbing the baton, or being the direct inheritors of the Egyptian mysteries. I think even the most recent work, April DeConnick, Dr. David Litwa, says yes, they were the Hermeticists and the Neoplatonists were coming out of Alexandria with this ancient Hermes religion, dying religion, and they kept it alive. And it is completely distinct from Christianity, Judaism, even though some of the participants were Jews, were pagans, and so forth. But this was completely different, and it is completely unique, because the Egyptian psyche and mentality was dying, this idea of non-linear time, how everything is eternal and timeless. The Egyptians weren't obsessed with death. They were obsessed with eternity. They saw the universe completely different than we did. And the Hermeticists and the Gnostics and the Neoplatonists, as they call the religion of the mind, where everything is psyche and everything goes to eternity and emanates from eternity, is what they had. I mean, there's this quote I had here. I like it a lot. It's from, I don't want a ticker, but it says, the pyramid doesn't stand for something. It makes something visible. This is from Osman from the mind of Egypt. And then this other scholar was talking about the Egyptian mentality. And he said, you don't believe in the gods. You believed in your eyes. That's how the Egyptians saw things. If you open your eyes, you're going to see the gods. You're going to see beyond the veil. you're going to see eternity. And I think that's what the Gnostics, the Hermeticists, and the Neoplatonists were sort of were digging into. And yeah, I'll have more for sure. Do you guys, we can go to the next question, or do you have a comment on what I said? Time is no issue tonight, or today for Joanna.
Are we doing the questions from the listeners, the viewers, or
No, I have a question. I wanted, because these questions actually is something that all four of us can deal. Where are these questions?
Maybe I'll just pipe in just for a quick moment, and that is to say, all of this is one massive Rorschach.
Always.
You know, and it's really, it's where we're coming from as we look into it, and what meaning, you know, can we make from it? That's maybe the most important thing. I don't know, from my point of view.
Yeah, yeah. And it kind of plays into the Egyptian lore, doesn't it? Because everything was on the table. Everything was one point in time. Let's see, questions. I know Nate, the occult fan, wanted to know how many moondogs fit on the tip of a pin. So I don't know, Vance, if you want to address that.
I'll pass.
He seriously asked that. Okay. The other question came from Patreon, Svava. And she asked me, I'd like to know which early Christian groups could have been organized by women. Is it possible the Sethians could have been such a group? If the much later mystery groups, also perhaps Templars who flew the flag, also associated with Mary Magdalene, were protecting the sacred feminine, and which went underground. I did send her my video that shows that obviously that the Mandeans say that there was a woman named Marian who founded it. The Nicenes claim there was a woman named Marian. The Carpocratians traced their line to Salome. You had Marcellina, who founded her very successful church in Rome, and obviously Mary Magdalene. Whenever in those times, if you had a gospel written for you, it wasn't just in a bookshelf. It meant there was an entire community that supported that gospel, and that gospel was a living myth and teaching. So there was plenty of that. The Sethians, as we've shown, the Sethians were like the secret society. They did not put their names on thing. Plotinus does mention some Sethians, but they did not offer up their names, and they pretty much kept themselves underground. But as it's been argued by Andrew Philip Smith, on the origin of the world, could, because of its very feminine tone and talking about period blood and birth pangs, it might have been written by a woman. So perhaps that's it. But other than that, Joanna, do you want to address anything? Cathars, feminine, Mary Magdalene on the question?
You actually answered it beautifully, because I was thinking immediately about Marcellina and the most recent work by Dr. David Litwa on Marcellina. I'm still waiting to buy his book, actually. But I was very impressed, you know, with his talk on Ion Bite. And also the person who asked the question asked about the Templars, because there is a kind of almost anecdotal tradition about it. But there are people who did a very good research that most of the churches built by the Templars were devoted to Mary Magdalene, and they open on the 22nd of July, which is the feast of Mary Magdalene in the Catholic Church. So we are still trying to find out what is the exact connection between the Templars and Mary Magdalene, but there was definitely something there. We also know, earlier, the Cathars, we also know that they did believe, although it is it was not known until, you know, maybe a couple of decades ago, that Mary Magdalene was, as they called, concubine of Jesus. Because, as you know, they were all burned at the stake and tortured. And all we know about their beliefs, really, is what the inquisitors wrote down, right? And so one inquisitor, Peter de Verneuil, I think, he said that that under torture, one of the Cathars said that, you know, that they believe that Mary Magdalene was Jesus's concubine, right? So but he said it sarcastically. So obviously the Cathar movement was also very popular with the troubadours, which were the poets of love. And the troubadours were always singing about this, you know, beautiful, unachievable lady. And it was always assumed that it's perhaps very Mary, Virgin Mary and so on. But obviously there's alternative research now showing that perhaps it was about Mary Magdalene, because there was an unprecedented number of women that joined a Cathar movement, partially because probably they could be preachers and they could be the perfecti after the consolamentum, right, which made them into the perfecti, the healers, but also because they had an example of Mary Magdalene as, you know, as the prominent spiritual teacher. So I think there are plenty of examples, but they still have to be explored more, because these traditions were repressed, right? So everybody is, it requires a very intense detective work, but there are many scholars who look into it now. So it's a fantastic question. Thank you. But you basically answered it before me. So really good answer.
All right. Dan, what do you think? You've also worked on the Cathars and the Knights Templars.
Yeah, it's clearly Mary Magdalene plays a key role in what we, you know, what I've called the new revelation of wisdom that emerged out of first century. There's certainly a clear, distinct sort of body of theology that emerged out of that, and Mary Magdalene is right in there, you know, as a, you know, very inner circle player. Of course, Pista Sophia, you know, features her, and it was interesting because I had heard from G.R.S. Mead that, where I read from him, that Pista Sophia probably came from a document called Questions of Mary. So,
really?
And there's something called the Greater Questions of Mary, which you know, it's, there's no copy of it available, and then Lesser Questions of Mary. Where there is reference to that document in one of the heresiologists, I don't know if it's Epiphanius, but and in that there are references to the sexual rites that were, some of these Gnostic groups were conducting, and it may have been an effort to try to discredit the Gnostics, you know, by including that. But anyway, you know, all that's
to a say, very pornographic one, the question of Mary.
Yes, that, and I didn't realize that until I was checking
until
that
it
out
was a surprise.
Recently.
It reminds me of a quote by a church historian. This is a recent one about the Gnostics. A nasty-minded adolescent of somewhat pornographic tendencies. I'll take it. Sure, yeah. The Gnostics were bros, huh?
But I think there, actually, in the Questions of Mary, Jesus produces a woman next to him and starts to have sex with her. This is what he means by pornography, I think, which is not so pornographic, really, right? It's just the idea.
Mary's not happy with it, Joanna. Mary's a little upset about the whole thing. So.
But if I can add something by what Don said, which was, yes, spot on. Thank you, Don. But actually, Jean-Yves Leloup also says that that the Questions of Mary and, you know, the birth of many, because sometimes it was translated Lesser Questions of Mary and so on. They actually, Pistis Sophia is like a more polite rendition of what was there, right? And even in Pistis Sophia, Mary Magdalene asked, I think, 39 out of 42 questions, right? So how more prominent you could be, right? And at the end, I think, as per usual, it's Peter who says, what's going on, right? shut her up. So, so there are these documents, and I'm delighted to read them because, and of course, the Gospel of Mary, right? Mm-hmm. So,
42 questions. So Egyptian. Yeah. So Egyptian. That right there. Well, great answer.
Yeah, so, go ahead, Mary,
Dan.
Mary Magdalene went to southern France, and, you know, I'm less familiar with the rigorous sort of scholarship around Mary Magdalene, but clearly she was quite an influential adept leading into the Benedictine order and things like that. But I think just sort of stepping back from the Magdalene, you know, just acknowledging, you know, Sophia as being kind of the great archetype of the divine feminine, that this Gnostic tradition championed. And so it does seem like women were much more involved and much more welcome into the Gnostic circles of that time, you know, so I think just in general, we could say maybe back then, but certainly now, we're looking at the Gnostic tradition as a resource to help for us to pivot out of the patriarchy, to reclaim the feminine aspect, which has been so trounced for so long. And so at least in that way, I think we can say that the feminine aspect in this tradition is very, very welcome and very strong.
Indeed, and well said. Well, the next question I had, and this is more personal, from a Patreon, Sebastian, and he asks, how and why do you keep on living in this world? Do you choose to believe certain things? How has your worldview evolved? How do you currently think about this live construct, everything? Is there anything that you are sure about? What is your best advice for anybody in life? Very powerful question. And it's been brought the old, well, if the world is so bad, why don't you just kill yourself? And, you know, you're in the demiurge, which I've addressed many times, because, of course, that's exactly what the Ouroboros wants. And just drink your pain and just shoot you out in another incarnation. There is no one here gets out alive. But for that, the one thing I am sure about is that we each have a sacred mission. And this mission comes from our higher self, from Sophia, from your soul, from your ancestors. It doesn't matter. But we all have a unique mission that is not just life-changing, but universe-changing, that helps restore the universe. It's what Mark Twain said, the two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you find out why. And Twain is 100% right. And if we don't listen to our ego, if we don't listen to the programming of our culture, of the archons, of our family, and we listen within, we're going to find out what our mission is. And how do you know when you're getting close to your mission? You're energized. You feel ecstasy. You might not even know what the entire mission is. Maybe you won't know. Maybe you're only allowed to know something in this world, but you will feel driven, energized. Maybe you'll still be depressed, sad, all that, but you will feel that sense of purpose and ecstasy that you are really part of the rescue operation of Sophia. I can't tell you if this is a simulation 100% or if I've seen archons, but I know this with all of my heart. This is true. Mark Twain knew it. All the great ones know this. They were humble. They said, my example is your example. So, and as somebody once told me, if you're constrained by your beliefs and your worldview and you're sad, get rid of them. Your worldview, your beliefs are a fiction somebody told you. You can change them anytime you want. You can create a better story and you can move on. So don't like your worldview, don't like your beliefs, get rid of them, find a better story. It's all programming. So that's what I had, and I had a little time to think about it. And again, people have asked me, why don't you just kill yourself and fool the demiurge? So, Joanna, would you like to speak
yes,
to this?
That's really well put, Miguel. But I was also thinking, because it kind of leads us towards, you know, the topic of the archons, you know, because nowadays it seems very apparent that definitely there are some rights. There's something going on. I'm not denying it. But, you know, the old hermeneutic saying that is also the same actually in esoteric Hinduism, it is as above, so below. But I think hermeneutics are also said, and actually the Gospel of Mary Magdalene is saying as below, so above. You know, I'm just paraphrasing which means it is actually up to us. And actually our interior life can change our exterior life, so to speak. So, and it takes, as you said, focus also as that. So actually the archons, whoever they are, you know, can stay in power only if we let them, right? If we gather our energy, right? And and the Gabebe Ines Park then, right? Mm-hmm. Then it's not only that it's from above to below, but it's below to above. You know, we change, we shift the cosmic powers actually through the power of this Ines Park, you know, which all esoteric traditions talk about, you know, and I think that I am going to go radical here, although it's a good, you know, I'm sure audience for this. It is that, that actually, oh no, I lost myself in what I was saying, but that actually we are capable of changing this, you know, so we are in possession of this power, you know, so we can actually expel them, you know, by focusing on the gnosis, which is also for me an inner spark. This is a different translation of gnosis, really. So it's not only as above, so below, but as below, so above. And I think in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, when she's talking about soul traveling through the different climates, which really like bad conditioning or, you know, bad tendencies of our personalities and other souls, I think she's not necessarily talking about different eons, but about our own inner life, about on us psychology. If we can get rid of these negative tendencies, the structures within us, then the structures above us and around us will also change. And I think I'm totally for, you know, see the reality the way what so-called conspiracy theorists are saying, because, you know, it is just so apparent nowadays. At the same time, I might say that I do not agree with the pessimism of because it means, okay, what can we do? When I think the Gospel of Mary Magdalene is giving us the tools, you know, what bothers you most in the world? Find it in yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, work on it. So release it. Right. So you, whether it is greed, you know, if greed bothers you in the world, you know, release your own greed, you know, what are you hungry for? You know, that your ego is tormenting you. And this is when you shift the external structures and cosmic structures. Does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That's my mm-hmm. interpretation of mm-hmm. Gospel of Mary rather than, you know, because it empowers you. Once you take responsibility, it empowers you, right? That actually through improving myself, I, you know, dispel the archons.
This actually, yeah, wonderful. And it reminds me of a saying in the, I think it's the Three Stelas of Seth, one of the Gospels, the Gnostic in the Nag Hammadi library. The way of ascent is the way of descent. And it seems to correspond to what you're saying. It's this how do we ascend? Well, it's actually how do we descend? You know, how does this work? And so, if incarnation, you know, if birth coming into this body, you know, is a descent into third dimensional reality. It's the soul kind of becoming confined into an initiatory sort of school of life where, you know, we've sort of gotten overlaid with layers of maybe misguidance and ways of coping and trauma. It's a matter of us working our way out of that in order to regain and reclaim more of our original sort of sense of self. And, you know, the whole, based on what I'm hearing from the question, I think that all of this and Gnosticism can be quite confusing, and if a person maybe get disoriented in the swarm in the sea of all of this, and I just think it's so important to stay rooted in the personal subjective. What is meaningful to you? What are you noticing here in this, you know, today, and what is maybe something that you could let go of, and what could you emerge into? But I think it's very unique to each of us. And for, you know, I can't tell you, or, you know, neither of us can really tell you what you need to do in order to figure it out. That's got to be something that's coming through your, you know, internally.
Well said. Yeah. Funny, that little presentation I have, that's exactly the quote I'm using, Dan, because all your answers, I mean, all our trauma, our complexes, everything. We can all our solutions, if we just trace it right back to the source, childhood, before child, ancestors. The answers are all right there. That's why the Gnostics were obsessed with the past, because that was the way you get to the end and to eternity. And how do we do all of this? Like you said, Dan, very confusing. Well, tonight I was driving with my daughter. I picked her up from ballet, and we have kind of where we switch songs on my phone while we're playing on the radio. And she plays Taylor Swift. And I'm like, you know, in the front seat, like, and it's, I was like, I just played a Cat Stevens song, and you're going to give me Taylor Swift. But it's a song, Anti-Hero. And I'm listening, and suddenly one part she goes, I will stare at the sun, but I will never look in the mirror. And I was like, holy moly, what a moment of gnosis. That's it. I mean, she's putting it right there. Look inward. Look at yourself. The sun is where you blind yourself, the ego, the solar gods. But if you look in the mirror, if you look within, and I listened to the rest of the song, I'm like, wow, this song is really about self-knowledge. My God, I stand correct. Well, I still like Cat Stevens, but okay, I'll give Taylor Swift this one song. That's it. No more. So that's how we do it. So awesome. This conversation's great. I wanted to play another video. This is for Joanna and what she is also offering. Then she can explain about it. For those of you in audio, I'll have to skip and put it on the show notes because there's no narration. And then we will get to some audience questions because there's a lot of them. Maybe we need to do this this Ask Me Anything once a month or once every 2 months because the interest is very high. But let me play this and then I'll give Joanna the chair. One sec. All right. Well, Joanna, tell us about your course.
First of all, I would like to thank Miguel for, you know, using his creative spirit because he created this trailer, and I'm immoderately happy about it because he did such a beautiful job on this. So thank you. And it is very uplifting, as I want it to be, because this course, which is The Goddesses of Eros and Secret Knowledge, is a companion to the book, The Other Goddess, but it can be taken separately also. And it basically wants to look into the possibility of Eros as a positive power in our life, because as Carl Jung was arguing, you know, we cannot argue the shadow out of existence. So we are also not only, you know, because sometimes it is misunderstood. Thank you, Anne. I don't want to be misunderstood. You know, of course, there's a dark side to sexuality, but everybody knows it. And somehow we are almost forced to focus on this aspect of Eros. And I think, like with anything with Gnosticism, and here I'm kind of a Gnostic in this, I said, well, what if we look at it differently? And in fact, what if there were traditions, which they were, and, you know, esoteric Hinduism, esoteric Tantra, and I'm talking about proper Tantra, Hindu proper Tantra, not, you know, what is necessarily practiced in the West, which is Neo-Tantra. And you know, also in Gnosticism, and also the relationship, possible relationship between Mary Magdalene and Jesus, not necessarily is as this kind of holy family, you know, as Margaret Sterbert presented it, although it was a fantastic idea, but maybe more of sexual alchemy using Eros for the advancement of expansion of human consciousness. And I think this is much more important whether they were married or if they had children, or my goodness, whether they started some idiotic French dynasty, which didn't accomplish anything of value, right? So I think that it's very interesting. And I'll also look at different priestesses and archetypes of Mary Magdalene, starting with Nimna and Inanna and Hathor, of course, and Isis. So, if you're interested in this, you know, whether the book or the course, and can I just say one more thing? Because I don't know if people know here the creators of Magical Egypt, the series, the fantastic series which look into esoteric Egypt. And during the solstice on the 21st, I think it will be about 7 p.m. New York time, I will be giving a talk, a webinar for them on Mary Magdalene in Esoteric Egypt. So perhaps you can join it as well, which is because this has to be explored. You know, it's just so exciting, you know, just giving a different interpretation and approaching Eros differently in a positive, joyful, expansive way. Thank you.
Wonderful. Yeah, the video was a blast. If anybody needs help or would like some of these trailers, these are fun. With Joanna, it was easy. I just thought of the book and I said, celebration, joy, because this is what it is, the return of the goddess, Eros, the time where we can still speculate about the Gnosis, the ancient Egyptians, Hermes, all this really cool stuff, and all to help us, again, not stare at the sun and look in the mirror at the end of the day like Taylor Swift. So it was wonderful. Yeah. And again, your book is great and look forward to your presentation. Awesome. Anything to say, Dan, before we get to some audience questions?
Looks right, wonderful, Joanna.
Yeah, yeah, check it out. And again, it will be on the show notes after the show, both in the audio and the YouTube and the Rockfin and all these other places that I put it. Well, Vance, any questions, comments from thee or the audience super chats?
Oh, I've been collecting them up. We'll start with the super chats, of course. Asterox, our buddy. And this could take the rest of the show, but we'll have to be careful. Could we define Gnosticism by stating what it isn't, what it is not?
Well, I think let me put that presentation later, because I think it really separates even more, isolates Gnosticism. And it shows how unique, again, it was compared to Western religions. I don't want to get into Eastern, because Easterns were even ahead of the time in many ways. So, Anna Almos, who gets kicked out of every Gnostic group except ours.
Yes, except ours. Yeah. Never ours.
We cannot kick him out of our group. Yeah. Anything else?
Oh, yeah. We got plenty of them. We got Lori Johnson, another super chat. Thank you, Lori. And of course, thank you, Anonymous. Lori wants to know here's another one that could take the whole show up. What do we think about Thunder Perfect Mind? Is this a description or a monologue of Sophia?
I'll let Dan or Joanna. I have some thoughts and I've done the presentation. Mm-hmm. There's a course on it at Virtual Alexandria Academy. Mm-hmm. I'll let you
guys. It's a powerful text. Incredible. There's the idea that Sophia makes herself known through thunder. Is a very compelling idea. And that's all I'll say about that right now.
I just like to add something, because actually I think Miguel has more to say about it, because I've seen his course and he has this wonderful lecture on thunder. So, you know, I just want to add that for me, when I was reading it, I love the contradictions there, because these contradictions are really contradictions of human nature. And also because it's in a feminine voice, it's contradiction of the feminine, the contradictions of the goddess, which I also felt, and many women, I think all women feel it. You know, it's not only about being a mother. It's not only about, you know, being a virgin. It is, I love, you know, she's a mother. She's a whore. You know, she's stupid and she's wise. And this is the most powerful, I think, actually poem for me about human nature, not only about the feminine, you know, and also very celebratory in a way, like, I am all of it. It's almost like the voice of the divine, feminine or masculine, except with this one, I think, happened to be in a feminine voice. It is like, I am all of it, and I can experience all of this, and I am in charge of it. You know, like, I claim my power. I love it. I claim my power to this amazing diversity, amazing possibilities. I can be all of that. Right. So I would say that the main message of this is, do not limit yourself, you know, get out of your head. You know, you are all of that.
Yeah. Beautifully said. She talked about Sophia. Thunder is, again, as you said, Joanna and Dan have said, completely unique, because we have a lot of veritologies of gods and goddesses where they speak about themselves. The Golden Ass has one. There's several of Isis, and The thing is that they're always supreme and cool and badass and just awesome. This is the first time where you have a supreme goddess who is completely humiliated by both humanity and other gods. She's been taken to the depths of humiliation, abuse, rape, rejection, everything you can think of, but she's also been up. You don't find that in ancient literature. So then we have to look, scholars debate about who she is, but you have to look at the characters. What goddesses have gone through this? Well, there's not many. You have the Shekinah in Jewish tradition. You have Sophia, and you have the Celestial Eve. That's it. So it has to be one of those three or a variation. Prunique. There's variations in the Gnostic texts: Achamoth, Prunikos, but they're all this sort of Sophia, Shekinah goddess. So I would say it has to be one of those. It can't be, I don't know, Isis. I don't think it can even be Inanna, you know, maybe, but I would say so. What do you guys think?
Oh, I think voice in Thunder of Perfect Mind is a voice of a source. Feminine to me is a source. You know, with men, there wouldn't be any generations, for example. It's women are the ones who bring forth the next generation with, you know, the help of men, of course. But in Thunder Perfect Mind, you're hearing the source speak in the feminine side of the source. And as the source, it is the source of, you know, all these different opposites, but it's the unity of opposites. You know, because as you were saying, Joanna, you know, she's the virgin and she's the whore. You know, it's the unity of everything. And so it's very deep and very powerful. That's what I get from it. I've read it several times.
Well, that's thunder for you. And there's so much more again in my presentation. There's gender bending, which makes it complex. The voice is very much like Jesus in the Gospel of John, because when you read the Gospel of John, the truth is Jesus is in control of the entire thing. You know, this is his story, what he's doing and his sacrifice. You know, even though he gets attacked by the Pharisees and crucified and mocked, he's in control. He is the great I am. He is us. Thunder is the same way. She knows what she has to do to be whole, to be a complete supreme goddess. And that includes a lot of bad things, but she's like, I'm writing this story. I mean, which one of us could write a fictional book about our lives and go through that? Very few of us. We'd have to be John Wayne or somebody like that, right? And live it.
You know, just I wanted to point out, so Lori in the chat made a comment, actually a quote from Thunder Perfect Mind. And I was sent out from power, came to those pondering me. Look at me, audience, hear me. Do not ignore me. And I think that this is what seems to, at least in my mind, link it with Sophia, mm-hmm. in that Sophia is beckoning us. She's beckoning us to awaken that spark within us that she helped to bring to us. And I think that this is what the Thunder Perfect Mind is saying. You know, it's a beautiful, I was sent forth from the power and I've come to those who reflect upon me. And I have been found among those who seek after me. So look upon me and you who are waiting for me, take me to yourselves. She's reminding us, come to me. So that's a beautiful part of the poem that I think is a little bit overshadowed by the duality that is so prominent.
Yeah, and of course the voice of thunder as coming from Eve or Sophia does appear in certain gospels, like the Gospel of Eve, I think, mm-hmm. the hypostasis. So thunder associated mm-hmm. with Sophia or Eve mm-hmm. is also another big giveaway. So awesome. Another question, Vance?
Okay, let's see. Yeah, I'll have to pick one then if there's only going to be a couple more. We got one question about whether or not we believe the archons are actual entities, or do you believe they are allegorical/metaphoric?
Yes. Yeah, remember that quote I put up? The pyramid doesn't stand for something, it makes something invisible. And as Paul Levy says, they are everything and they are nothing. They are, that's what makes them the archons, the ultimate villains, the ultimate teachers. I don't even know what else to say. We could do a whole show on the archons. I should do a presentation on the archons because it's just, it's endless. It's hard.
You know, think of the Matrix, you know, Smith wasn't really any one of the inhabitants of the Matrix. It was a program in the machine that nobody could see in the Matrix, and they take over one of the bodies in the Matrix. And I see a lot of archonic activity in that case, you know, like they inhabit one of us and they become, you know, the nasty, like Hitler would be an archon, right? Because in whatever the spirit took over him, it would turn him from the paper hanger to the archon. So I think a lot of it is that. But even in the universe itself, if you look the way it's structured, is the destructive forces of the universe are built in at the very, very lowest level. And those are archonic forces. They're the ones that tear everything apart. It's the system that creates these things. So
And as I've learned recently, if we want to think like the Egyptians or the ancient Hindus, it can't be never either or. We have to have a more holistic way, a total way, which with the Hermeticism and the Gnostics saw things. What do you think, Dan?
You know, Vance, that was really well put. You know, I think that one of the great contributions of the Gnostic system is the whole concept of the archons. That you know, Sophia and the archons were, at least in the Sethian system, are really the two main themes. And the idea that we're actually living in an archonic world is tremendous. That's quite unique, I think, in the fine tuning of, you know, a cosmology of where we are in the scheme of things. And I think it's the question sort of answers itself. It really, you know, it's both. It really, you know, if you try to put your finger on it, it disappears, you know, and yet it is real. Hypostasis, the fundamental reality of the archons, you know, that title was not just thrown in there for no reason. It's quite, quite essentially a huge theme that we're working with. And yet, I think it's really important for us to put it in perspective and anchor ourselves in either the spark or the divine feminine or Eros, you know, and be, you know, very, you know, anchored and strong in that as we then look to the issue and the phenomenon of the archons.
Well said. Yeah, it's like bringing back 1899 at the end of the show, you go with the big reveal. You're like, is the hero the Demiurge or Sophia? And you almost want to say yes, because it's such a mind trip. It's so trippy. And it's a like Vance would like, because it's a simulation within a simulation. And who's the God above God? And you start going, yikes. Just enjoy the ride.
To the infinite power.
Yes, it is. It is. Hey, Joanna, do you have anything on the archons? Or
I think it was all said by you very well. I just would like to basically come back to what I said before, that I definitely personally believe in the reality of the archons, not only as something theoretical, but it definitely exists. But at the same time, I believe that the power is within us. And I think what Dan also said so beautifully about the founder, perfect mind, it is, she says, do not ignore me. So this is this voice within you that is very quiet, and yet it screams, you know, different level. You know, this is the real reality, right? And you are actually in charge of this. You are actually supposed to flow with this, you know. So look within rather than maybe obsessing with the doings of the archons, you know, because they just do their own thing, and maybe they're just immature and selfish, and, you know, but if you you know, if you take care of your own shit, you know, own your shit, you know, yeah, then they have no power over you. And if we all do it individually, eventually, you know, they will have to go wherever they came from, you know, like we will be free. So this is ultimately the way of liberation. And in some ways, in this way, actually, archons can be a gift because they show you what's wrong. Right? Just don't point fingers outside of yourself. Just what's wrong here and work on it. So that's my take.
Yeah, it's like what did a Gnostic priest said? I've never seen an Archon, but I felt their effects on the universe in my life. And as Jacques Vallée once said about hostile aliens, it said, ignore their ontological reality at your own peril. Don't want to think they believe? Fine. But they're going to do what they're going to do, and that's it. So, awesome. Well, I wanted to do this presentation real quick, just like two or three slides. I think you guys will enjoy, and it should answer a lot of questions. I have it over here. It's got a couple points. Everybody see it? Yes, you like the little, that's fan art. Obviously, Sophia disciplining her son, Yaldibaldi. With a spear. That's what moms do, right? So, still one of the best books, which I still ask, even though it was 2006 it came out, and that's Professor Stephen Davis's The Secret Book of John, the Gnostic Gospel Annotated and Explained. His commentary is just excellent, and he really gets to the heart of Gnosis. The scholarship might be a little bit outdated, but again, his summaries are just excellent. But he is talking about something important because we're talking about ancient Egypt and how the Neoplatonists, the Hermeticists, and the Gnostics came out and what makes them unique. And he talks about they are the mind model religion. And let me read it for you. Gnosticism is essentially a mind model religion like Buddhism, Advaita Vedanta, Hinduism, Kabbalistic Judaism, and Sufism. The Gnostic idea of cosmology as psychological evolution are similar to those of certain Eastern religions. The Samkhya philosophy, as interpreted by Patanjali, author of the Yoga Sutras, claims that ignorance brings about the creation of what seems to be a world. Yeah, I'm accentuating too fast. Idealistic schools of Buddhism, such as Zen and Tibetan Vajrayana, probably mispronouncing, teach that the world is brought into being as external materiality by the ignorance of persons who so perceive it. They claim that the Buddha mind is all and everywhere and coextensive with the human mind. Kashmir Shaivism is very much like Gnosticism, but with one crucial difference. It maintains that the Godhead, Shiva, deliberately forgot itself and became us in order to enjoy the splendor of discovering God again. Gnosticism regards that process as a tragedy growing out of a mistake. Mythology is narrative, and narrative demands plot, places, and persons. Remember your worldview, what I said, your worldview and your beliefs? Gnosticism's use of myth to communicate its main idea led it into difficulty because there is a fundamental incompatibility between mind model religion and social model religion. That would be most of the Western religions until the Eastern influence 19th century. The mind is not at all like a society, and not at all like persons, social roles, or a series of spheres and chambers. The physics of mind is not the same as the physics of society. To use myth to communicate mind model religion cannot help but cause confusion. If we take the metaphor of mind seriously, we can see that Gnostics took upon themselves the incredible task of psychoanalyzing God. They did this work through introspection, presuming that since each awakened human is an aspect of God, undiluted self-knowledge is equivalent to knowledge of God. The career of the divine mind, its fall into illusion and self-forgetfulness, was not something independent of human existence, but quite the contrary, because each individual is or has been the Godhead failing to know itself. each individual has a personal history of the fall of God. And that's what he said in my book when I quoted, he said this in my book, Voices of Gnosticism. Stephen Davis said, I think that Gnosticism is about discovering the way that God has turned into you and then realizing that if you can describe how it is that God turned into you, you can reverse the process. I think that's what it is about. And Dan brought this quote from the Three Stellas of Seth. I did it too. The way of ascent is the way of descent. Know therefore, as those who live, that you have attained and you taught yourselves the infinite things. So that's what I want to say that's very distinctive about Gnosticism. It's a mind model religion. It does not fit in normal society. It never has fit and never fit in Western Europe because it is a completely, as the ancient Egyptians were completely alien to the Greeks and the Romans and the Persians, the Gnostics were so alien because they were in a world of eternity, in a world of the one mind. As Joanna knows, this attitude has worked well in the Eastern as it's evolved and society has sort of accepted it to an extent. But that's the whole idea about Gnosticism. That's why they were believed in altered states of mind, because you can't solve a problem with the same mind that created them. And you have to get yourself out of this normative life to see eternity. So that's part of what I wanted. Let me know what you guys think. I need some water.
When's your next book coming out?
I don't know.
Good question.
I have so many books. Yes, I do. I want to approach a couple about a book on inspirational Gnosticism, but then I have this idea. I want to write a book about Elvis. So I have this idea. Seriously, there's this battle between me, write a book about Gnosticism or Elvis. So I'll have to let I don't know what to do. I'll have to go to the Oracle at Delphi or something then.
Or there must be some conspiracy theory that Elvis was a closet Gnostic.
He what? No. He read the Gospel of Thomas.
Oh my gosh.
He knew of the Gnostic.
He read it. Oh my god. Yeah.
Yes. He knew of the Gnostic. He had a vision of the Demiurge, like Philip K. Dick, like blow by blow, the same bit. I mean, there is so much the world doesn't know that's been covered up by the Memphis Mafia about his like spiritual life, but
that would be a wonderful book. Then I'm completely convinced you have to write this book, and I'll be the first to buy, because like I didn't know any of this. You know, I actually bought into the, you know, Elvis image. You know that he was who he was, but it looks like he wasn't who he was.
He was America's shaman, American's greatest wizard and people. It's been hidden, like the wisdom of the Gnostic.
But, in plain sight. Yeah.
In plain sight. So that's, I hope that answers more or less what Anonymous, what do you think, wanted to know, Vance? Because this really puts the Gnostics, all the Gnostic groups completely separated from most Western religions. Again, in the 19th century, Eastern thought came into Europe, Schopenhauer and all that. So, and German idealism and Hegel. So then the mind model religion became very popular in Western culture around the 19th century. But it was Hermeticism that sort of still kept this idea going.
Yeah, I think you did answer it, because Gnosticism is not a social religion. Reverend Barlow G was saying that something similar. He's with us tonight in the audience, and he was saying that it's centralized, like Catholicism is centralized, and all the power is in the priests and the Pope and so forth. Whereas, you know, Gnosticism, it's, you know, spread out among each Gnostic. So, you know, it's a kind of another way of saying it. It's not outside, you know, it's the social religions, everything's outside. It's in the structure, not with you. You were just kind of hanging on to the structure. You depend on others to do so. So, I think it was true.
Yeah, as Dr. Heller said, salvation is not about following outer laws. It's about inner revelation. Kind of like Buddhism is similar to that, right? It's this interior awakening that changes it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, to me, the distinction between Nosik saying it was a tragedy and Sophia and the consort and so forth, you know, and besides God deliberately forgetting itself, if you really look at it carefully, is it really the same thing? You know, just from a different point of view, because if the mighty one, you know, the unfathomable one, obviously got to this point where it split itself up, and you know, there's all these different apparent pieces and apparent different sparks. So maybe that could be viewed as a tragedy just as well as Sophia. You know, just a mechanism or a mythological mechanism to describe it. So I don't see Gnosticism as that much as just a slightly bit of kind of a flavor from Indian Advaita, you know, to me.
All is mind, yes. And if anybody wants these slides, email me or I'll send you a PDF. Again, this is something I put together. The other thing I wanted to share real quick, I hope you don't mind, is Howdy Mikowski, great book, is straight from the Ayyambite Gnostic ethos. This will come out in a couple of days. But sometimes people ask me, you know, Joanna and Vance, you've seen me do all these recreations in our group. It's in the virtual Alexander camera, how baroque and intense the Gnostics were about these mind-altering religions and all the preparation that could take months and the passwords to the Pleroma. And that's fine. That's fine. It was great. But something that I'd forgotten, and I had a cleansing done by this, the psychic cleansing done a couple weeks ago by this great witch. Her name was Ava. And she told me it's so simple to get. She says, you're being attacked. She told me, watch out when you, in your intros, whenever you talk about the archons, have a little prayer on the side, because you are inviting them into your room. Into just by talking, even if Vance and I are mocking Yaldi Baldi, you know, do something, they're always attacking. But she says the cleansing, all it takes is a simple no. I was like, really? I don't have to do these magic and put on a hat. And no, consent. This universe is run by consent in the spiritual world. And Howard writes in his book, some ideas to fight the archons, or if you're astral traveling. And he writes, we might create affirmations such as, I am free and sovereign, stay away from the white light, return home, I will not return to planet crazy. That's if you see the light, avoid it, as they say. You get the idea. My suggestion would be to keep them as positive as possible. Focus on where you want to go, not what you don't want. I think this is a valuable tool to have ready as a direction on intent as the death event approaches. Howard writes a lot about how to break from the reincarnation. The Nag Hammadi chapter, Apocryphon of James, tells us that we will need to remind the archons that we know we are not a material form, that we come from the Pleroma, the true oneness, and that is our home. Knowing this and telling them is a reminder to the demiurge / archons that they are not from the Pleroma, and such have no power to keep you away from it. This could also be part of a CD tape or sheet of paper. Have somebody read it to electricity. He talks about these exercises, and it's true. The Nag Hammadi says that if you're out there in outer space, you've died, you're taking it, or they're attacking, just say, this is not my home. I have another home. That's all you need to do to deal with the archons. Or as this witch told me, just say no. Just say no. You have no power. But of course, all the rest is great. No problem on all that. So just wanted to share that with you guys. Oh, you're on mute, Vance. Or did the archons take your voice like thunder?
Yeah, they took my voice. Different focus. Focused on the other chat window. One thing I found, you have to recognize when that little voice in your head is archonic. If you think it's your voice, then you'll buy into it and say, oh, no, you know, I'm going to get sick. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Well, wait a minute. You know, if you step outside it and you kind of hear it and can recognize it for what it is, you say, banish it. And then it's gone, which is kind of basically what I believe you just said.
Then there's also the anchoring in the source, you know, in Sol for ineffable, that, you know, this is where I am anchored into and definitely outside of the archonic realms. And this was the wonderful story of Noria in the hypostasis of the archons, where Noria just says, you know, archon, you know, Yelda Byoth is saying, okay, you've got to be subservient to me. And she says, no, you know, she's ferocious rage, you know, I will not be dominated by you. And she calls up to the, you know, the higher angelic realm. That's that, that is, you know, cause they're pretty powerful. And so, and that the higher, you know, Alethea mm-hmm. comes down, basically says, yes, girl, we got you covered.
Yes.
Good. Well said indeed.
Alethea, my favorite.
I think it's Alethea.
Oh, yeah. You were asking about Alethea.
Yeah, I probably pronounced it wrong, but
So that's where she shows up, is in the hypostasis of the archons as one of the four high angels.
I'll have to read that again.
Yeah, and the interaction with Noria is really, really wonderful.
This is a Valentinian tradition, right? Is that true?
In some systems, yeah. Some systems. There's a lot of borrowing. Yeah.
Yeah, the name only appears in certain systems, but...
Awesome. Well, I think that was the end of that. Audience questions, Vance?
Yeah, we got some buffered up here. Well, let's pick one. Here's an easy one, short one. Miguel, what is your favorite soundbite that you've ever played?
Oh my God, that's so hard.
I know what it is. I'm going to guess nipples for men.
I think it might be when I got the software back when. What the hell is the name of the one? Adobe Audition. I think being able to take out Keanu Reeves saying, I know Kung Fu, was a huge task, you know, because I couldn't do it. So I was very proud of it to be able to rip that from the internet. Now it just takes, I can do it really second. I think the ones that get me excited, honestly, might be anything from True Detective. Because I think Russ, the protagonist, really goes into the heart of Gnosticism and his ideas. And the ending of the first season is one of the most beautiful, positive, and Manichaean endings at all. His cosmology of the stars and everything. So I always dug. And of course, I have a soft spot for anything of The Matrix, but... God, so I think I've got the entire movie in sound bites in a folder in my hard drive, honestly, just the entire thing. So
I like that one from Jacob's Ladder, where the chiropractor is, you know, I forget the names now, tells him, you know, about the angels ripping out things from him. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I wish I remembered it, but that really hit a chord with me.
Yeah, he's talking about Eckhart, the mystic. Meister Eckhart. Yeah, that angels, yeah. The devils are angels if you let them strip your egoic self.
Right.
And take that, just like Joanna was saying, they can be our teachers too. I was like, is that a soundbite from Vance?
No, soundbite from the Christmas tree is going up tonight.
Oh, yeah, already? Awesome.
Yeah.
Gotta buy it.
My son wanted it up there. So somebody asked if the Islamic people, you know, if the Prophet Muhammad, does Gnosticism mention Prophet Muhammad? And I answered it in the chat saying, well, you know, Islam was a little bit too late. By then, Gnosticism had, you know, kind of died down. But
Muhammad probably did know about Gnosticism. There are many hints. I wrote about it. But perhaps the main one is in Islam, Jesus doesn't die. He is plucked at the last minute and somebody else is put there. I forgot what the Quran says. That tradition only happens in Gnostic groups. Basilides, Acts of, I think the Apocalypse of Peter, a few others. So Muhammad, and there's other very big hints that Muhammad was drawing from source, either from the Manichaeans or there were some breakaway Gnostic groups or something. So he, yeah. And of course, then Sufism and a whole bunch of Gnostic ideas, of course, permeate in yeah. Islam.
He mentioned, he was asking, does Gnosticism mention Muhammad, though, not the other way around? Mm-hmm. You're saying, does, you know, did Muhammad know about Gnosticism?
Yeah, the appendix in my book includes that quote from the Quran about mm-hmm. Jesus and at the you know, he didn't die.
Exactly. But yeah, none of the, I don't think, yeah, Muhammad was what, 6th century by then, the Gnostics?
Yeah.
They'd basically turned into Manichaeans, or there were Paulinists fighting the Byzantine Empire. You know, they were just away from Arabia. Let's put it that way.
Want another question here? I got
sure. More. Let's do one more question and then.
Oh, one more. Oh no, you put me on the spot. I got to pick one.
Or two short ones.
Let's see. Here we go. Anon wanted to know. Let's see. Are the Iacons evil or just misunderstood?
Yes. Again.
Okay.
We cannot go. We can never do either or. We can't. I know that's, again, we are thinking of that thinking that is that destroyed the empire, the subjugated women that starts war, that linear thinking. We have to try to let go, and then we really understand mm-hmm. Archons or thunder and all that.
So. It's evil and misunderstood. See?
Yeah, what does he mean by evil? I don't know. What there is evil? Go.
And Oswald Spengler wanted to know if, Joanna, do you know anything about Judith von Hall, a Swiss anthroposophist who... I can't say that right, who claims to have experienced stigmata directly.
No, unfortunately, I didn't hear about her. Although, you know, people had, right, stigmata. So, but no, I didn't hear about this particular woman. I'm sorry.
Do you have any favorite medieval mystic women, Joanna?
Oh, I'm being put on the spot now.
Because no, there's quite a few, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking who... Let me think about this for a moment, okay?
All right. So, yeah,
Hildegard is probably the most popular,
that's
right?
Almost,
because she was so universal, really, right? And she was she was very rebellious, you know. So she was even trying to teach in the church, you know, and bossing the popes around at the same time, saying, "Oh, I'm nobody. I'm just a humble woman." And she was a scientist, so you know, she was this kind of wild mystic. And it's a mystery that, like Meister Eckhart, they were not called heretics. And I think some scholars argue that it was this unique time at the time, you know, in Germany especially, that somehow they could get away with this. You know, like that neither Meister Eckhart or Hildegard were called heretics. But for example, St. Francis could be called a heretic as well. But the way I know, for example, how he managed not to be called a heretic, because he said that you have to always honor the priest. Mm. And this, after that, you know, whatever he said, it was okay, because he kind of, you know, nod in the direction of a church. But I think yes, probably Hildegard, but I'm not being very original here. I would have to think about, you know, Julian of Norwich, you know, like there are lots of there's a
Teresa de Avila.
Bridget of Sweden also.
Joan of Arc.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Except that it's kind of sad, you know, what happened to her, you know? So I'm looking more about women who had a little bit more fun. I mean, like they were wild mystics and they got away with it, you know. So,
well, good deal. Yeah, good deal. Yeah, and I don't know if you've read some of Diana Pass's, because earlier she says that Teresa de Avila, her vision it's been completely changed by art and priests that originally she was describing saucers and orbs, not angels and God. Yeah. So and she had an alien visitation for all practical purposes.
Yeah, because she says it was actually very painful. So it's not this kind of beautiful angelic vision, but it's almost like laser beams, you know, were going through her. And it was like she was being penetrated by them. So it sounds basically like alien abduction.
Right.
So, yeah. But a wonderful mystic at the same time, yeah.
Awesome. Well, one last question and we can start wrapping up. It's been a great conversation. Bent? Those Archons took
the voice. I had a question. Boy, I got a problem with these Archons tonight. Yeah, that's it for the questions.
All right. Well, awesome. Well, guys, it's been, again, a great conversation. Everybody in the chat, good questions. Good questions from Patreon, good discussions. I should probably do a show on Islam and Gnosticism or do something, because it's been a while. I have not done justice to the Islamic Gnosticism in a while, and I should honor that wonderful tradition. But yeah, let's wrap it up. Again, check out the virtual Alexandria Academy course. I'll have more. Check out Joanna's new course. It's great. I love it. And everything else she's doing. So, Joanna, thank you. And please let the audience know what they need to know about you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So, thank you. So, the book is on Amazon. The course is on my publisher's site, but you can also go to my site, joannacuyava.com, and there you see the Goddesses of Eros and Secret Knowledge course if you want to check it out. And I'll be posting something on my Facebook soon about the Women of Wisdom gathering and my talk on Mary Magdalene and the Esoteric Egypt, which will be on the 21st of December, your time, around 7 p.m. Eastern time. So, but yes, you know, so I hope that I can connect with you this way. Thank you. And thank you for talking about it, Miguel.
Yeah. And Dan, great talking to you again. Always enjoy your work, what you have to say. And yeah, everybody, definitely also get The Divine Spark Within. It's an important book, regardless of how you approach Gnosticism. Where can people find out about you, Dan? At this rate, you'll probably be in some jail, but tonight you're free. where can they find out about you?
So, yes. So my website is sophiaproject.net. And you can purchase the book through there and also see my articles, and everything is, you know, available through that portal. And thanks so much, Miguel and Vance, for this opportunity, and wonderful hanging out with you, Joanna, and having this great conversation here. And thanks to everybody. My gosh. Great questions. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Smart guys, insightful, wise people in the group. Great group, and they've got so much knowledge. I'm envious. And Vance, thank you for keeping things under control. We don't know how many of you are on the pin of a needle, but maybe we'll find out one day.
Well, you know, it occurred to me, I should have asked, how big is the pin?
Exactly. Well, thanks, Vance, and thanks, everybody else. Please, this will be out in audio soon. It will be on all channels after we say goodbye. But as I always say, thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self here in the desert of the real. You have a purpose and it's amazing. And as always, write your own gospel and live your own myth. Good night, everyone.